welcome to Bible Talk. This is a podcast, and we're going to read the Bible.
And then we're going to talk about it. It's a podcast for everyday people. Acts chapter 27. Ivy, you want to read in verse 1?
I will. Then it was decided that we would sail for Italy. Paul and some other prisoners were handed over to a centurion named Julius who belonged to the Imperial Regiment. We boarded a ship from Adramantium, wow, about to sail for ports along the coast of the province of Asia, and we put out to sea. Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica, was with us. This next day, we landed at Sidon, and Julius, in kindness to Paul, allowed him to go to his friends so that they might provide for his needs. From there, we put out to sea again and passed to the lee of Cyprus because the winds were against us. When we sailed across the open sea off the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we landed at Myra and Lycia. There, the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy and put us on board. We made slow headway for many days and had difficulty arriving off Cnidus. When the wind did not allow us to hold our course, we sailed to the lee of Crete, opposite Salamis. We moved along the coast with difficulty and came to a place called Fair Havens near the town of Lassi. Much time had been lost and sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the Day of Atonement. So Paul warned them, "Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo and to our own lives also." But the centurion, instead of listening to what Paul said, followed the advice of the pilot and of the owner of the ship. Since the harbor was unsuitable to winter in, the majority decided that we should sail on, hoping to reach Phoenix and winter there. This was a harbor in Crete, facing both southwest and northwest.
All right, so you're getting some travel details, where they're stopping and the type of opposition that they're facing. All the while, what's happening here is it's setting up for this great storm that's about to hit them. And Paul, warning them ahead of time, this isn't going to go well. We should stop. They don't listen. They take the advice of the ship owner, and why wouldn't they? The captain is the one who's out on the waters all the time. It's his job. And the ship owner is the one who's got the most at stake when it comes to what would be lost if something were damaged. And then you got the word of Paul, who's just
right,
a Pharisee turned Christian, who's not a captain, mm-hmm, nor the owner of the boat and its merchandise. So Paul warns them, but of course they don't listen because
no.
Who is he?
Right.
All right.
He's a prisoner.
Yeah, we pick it back up here in verse 13.
So just for a second, In this chapter, I don't know why, but it feels more, it seems like you can feel Luke a lot more as the author. Because I felt like so much of even the last couple of chapters felt like more of a...
Sure, because it's quoting Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like Paul's writing.
Right. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, now he's just talking about Paul. And is revealing his own experience through that. So I think it's pretty cool. I like it so far.
All right.
Okay. Verse 13?
Yes.
When a gentle south wind began to blow, they saw their opportunity. So they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and were driven along. As we passed to the lee of a small island called Cauda, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure, so the men hoisted it aboard. Then they passed ropes under the ship itself to hold it together because they were afraid they would run aground on the sandbars of Syrtis. They lowered the sea anchor and let the ship be driven along. We took such a violent battering from the storm that the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved.
Oh, let's pause there.
Okay.
So just a picture being painted of how bad the conditions have gotten. They haven't seen the sun for days. Mm. They've thrown over the cargo. They're trying to keep the ship together with ropes. They're dragging the anchor to try and slow the ship's, you know, motion through the seas. They're no longer, the sails aren't up. They're just going wherever the wind may take it. All that they're trying to do now is hold the ship together. Getting where they planned on going is not the priority anymore.
No.
Now it's just living. A matter of living.
Living is the priority at this point, yes.
So it puts them in a desperate place. Everybody's desperate now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and verse 21, after they had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and said, "Men, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete.
I told you so."
"Then you would have spared yourself this damage and loss." Paul points out that he did tell them so. This lack of credibility that he had earlier, because again, he's not a captain.
Sure.
And he's not the owner of any of the gear. Suddenly, he's got credibility because he turned out to be quite correct. But he's going to use this.
Yes, he is.
He's going to try to leverage this to help them. So anyway, verse 22, it says, "Now I urge you to keep your courage, because none of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me and said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island."
Some island. It's going to happen.
So Paul uses the peril and uses the new credibility that he has as the one who said the peril was coming.
Right.
To point them toward God. He uses this moment to talk to them about the God he serves, the message that God has delivered, and the fact that God cares about them and has entrusted all of them to Paul.
Correct.
But they will lose the ship.
Yeah, I think this is an incredible template for how a disciple makes disciples. There, you look for the Spirit's opportune time being placed in front of you. And I think Paul was great at recognizing those opportune times.
Hard times are a great time.
Yes.
To point toward God.
Right. Yeah. Because in the good times, ironically, you're not in need, and therefore you don't really think you need God. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. In verse 27.
Oh, I'm reading.
You're the one.
"On the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea when about midnight, the sailors sensed they were approaching land. They took soundings and found that the water was 120 feet deep. A short time later, by the way,
I'm fascinated by it because I have no idea how they did that kind of thing at that time, but that's not the point.
It is pretty fascinating. Yeah. I actually researched it once. It's pretty smart. You just basically drop this thing down and you know how many meters or whatever it is. And then you do it again and again and again. And you can tell if you're moving closer to land or further away. But it's pretty neat. "A short time later, they took soundings again and found it was 90 feet deep. Fearing that we would be dashed against the rocks, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight. In an attempt to escape from the ship, the sailors let the lifeboat down into the sea, pretending they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. Then Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, 'Unless these men stay with the ship, you cannot be saved.' So the soldiers cut the ropes that held the lifeboat and let it drift away."
Pause there.
Yeah.
So some guys obviously still think Paul is, maybe he got lucky with the weather's going to get bad thing. weather does get bad. So
right.
maybe it wasn't God who told them anything, and they just think, this is a bad situation, and I got to get out, I got to escape.
Mm-hmm.
But he notices that they're trying to get away, and he says, all right, if you stay with us, you're going to survive. But if you leave, it's on you.
Right, right.
And he's got enough confidence from the rest of the crew that the soldiers decide, okay, and they cut the lifeboat loose so that no one can get out. Which is, think about that now.
Yeah.
You're in the midst of a storm. Lifeboats are for?
Saving.
Saving during times of peril.
Right,
and using.
Exactly.
And instead, they are putting their confidence in what Paul has told them about what God told mm-hmm. him. And they're saying the life is not in the lifeboat. The life is in the crash. The life is in the shipwreck.
Wow. That's a sermon all unto itself.
That's something else
hey,
right there.
File that one away, big shooter.
Okay. Pick it back up there.
Verse 33. Just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat. For the last 14 days, he said, you have been in constant suspense and have gone without food. You haven't eaten anything. Now I urge you to take some food. You need it to survive. Not one of you will lose a single hair from his head. After he said this, he took some bread and gave thanks to God in front of them all. Then he broke it and began to eat. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. Altogether, there were 276 of us on board.
So that gives you some idea of how big the ship must have been.
Right? When they had eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the grain into the sea. When daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach where they decided to run the ship aground if they could. Cutting loose the anchors, they left them in the sea and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. The bow struck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken to pieces by the pounding of the surf. The soldiers planned to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping, but the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life and kept them from carrying out their plan.
Because Paul was one of those prisoners.
Yes. Yeah. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. The rest were to get there on planks or on other pieces of the ship. In this way, everyone reached land safely.
All 276. Just as Paul said,
souls.
The ship was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone survived. So it's really, you know, there's a ton of detail about travel and shipwrecking and weather. And so it doesn't feel like a very spiritual chapter, like, oh, I'm learning something about Jesus or I'm mm-hmm. developing a conviction. Unless you get below the surface, no pun intended,
right.
a little bit, and understand that in chaos, our tendency is to, you know, put our security or our trust into the things we can control. And Paul is saying, lose control. Let it go. Safety isn't in any of those measurables or things that you can manipulate.
Right.
Safety is in your faith and your trust in what I'm telling you.
So, right.
Well,
and what incredible growth for Paul and the disciples that accompanied him, you know, just to be in this position. I mean, think about it. Paul got on that ship as a prisoner, and by the end of the whole thing,
he's the captain. Yeah,
he's the original Jack Sparrow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right.
It's good stuff.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to the next time that we'll meet. Until then, we have a reminder, something to ponder and meditate on.
Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says.